Good afternoon, good morning, good evening from wherever you're listening into from around the country and around the world today. This is Skip Weisman, the Leadership and Workplace Communication Expert, and we have this month's expert interview series. This will be the final interview in this 12-month series that began back in August of 2013. And today I'm excited to have with me as my guest Ann Latham of Uncommon Clarity. Ann and I have a lot in common with regards to the work we do. As those of you who follow me know, I speak a lot about specificity and the lack of specificity being one of my seven deadliest communication sins, which causes problems in work environments. So that lack of specificity causes problems because it leads to a lack of clarity. So I find these two topics very, very related. Ann's entire business is really based on helping organizational leaders create clarity. And her clients range from big organizations like Hitachi and public television to college work with Smith College and among others. So I'm looking forward to hearing more about that work. Ann delivers her clarity message worldwide through newsletters, articles, and books. She's also been quoted in the New York Times, Forbes, Business Week, and Inc. magazines. I'm also very jealous because Ann has traveled to 36 countries. She has me beat in that regard. 48 states and 7 Canadian provinces. She makes her home in Western Massachusetts. And the other thing we have in common is we're both hockey fans. Unfortunately, she is a fan of the Boston Bruins. I'm a New York Rangers fan, so we have some conflict there. But we do enjoy the sport together, as we were just talking before everybody came on the line. So, Ann, welcome to the Expert Interview Series.
Hi, Skip. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. I've been looking forward to this for a long time.
Yeah, well, great. Well, so let's dive right in. My first question for you has to do with the name of your company, which is quite unique, Uncommon Clarity. Where did that come from? How did you decide on a name like that?
Well, before I left my corporate job of 25 years, I asked a lot of people, a lot of my colleagues, what is it that I do that's most unusual and that I do exceptionally well? And the responses I got led completely to choosing the name Uncommon Clarity. They said that I consume massive amounts of information and find the kernel that's the essence, or I sculpt fog, or I push ropes, or all kinds of things, but it all boiled down to Uncommon Clarity. And so, of course, then I had to check and see if the URL was available, and it was. So that's where it went.
Yeah, that's always the first search now.
Yes.
To see if you can grab that that web address. So can you give us a little bit about your background, what happened during your 25 years in the corporate world? What did you do, and how did you come upon this transition to your own business?
Yeah, well, I started out as a software engineer, depending on how far back you go, of course. But I was a software engineer for a lot of years, worked my way up through the software development, management, program development, got into process improvements, and ended up getting to the point where I was given a lot of the projects that were cross-functional, cross-divisional, difficult, complex projects that they didn't really know who to give them to. So after I did a great job on the first one, I got a whole bunch of them after that. And it was an excellent experience and let me see all aspects of the organization and get involved in a lot of different pieces. So from there, I jumped out and went and worked for a subsidiary of the company I was working at, and that was a very different experience. And it was really what paved the way for my deciding to become an independent consultant, because I walked into this division, this subsidiary. It was a pretty small R&D primarily organization, and I was able to get my fingers into every aspect of their business and learn so much and had so much fun that I said, wait a minute, I want to do this for more businesses like this. So that's when I decided I was just going to take off and go it alone. So I started my company.
It sounds very interesting and sort of related to my journey. I started my business in 2002 and was doing something totally different. I was doing more executive coaching, actually sales professional coaching, accountability and goal setting and things like that for financial producers, and was referred into a client who asked me to kind of fix their work environment. And I spent 6 months with them and made some really huge changes in the workplace culture. And it was really rewarding work. And I said, I want to do more of this. And so in 2007 or so, I shifted my entire focus to doing more of this type of work. It is very rewarding when the clients get it and work with you and make those transformations.
Yeah, it's great when you get great results.
Yeah. So why are you so clear? Where does this come from, and how do you do it? I guess it starts with yourself.
I think it starts in my DNA. I think I got a lot of it from my parents, but I majored in math at Tufts University, and this actually brings up kind of a chicken and egg question. So, was I good at math because I'm really clear, or was studying math something that helped me create clarity? And I think it's a little of each. I think that studying math really strengthened my abilities. What's a proof but finding the shortest path from where you are to where you want to get to? And I did a lot of mathematical proofs. So in some ways, all that problem solving and dealing with complexity, certainly I think the math studies helped. I also spent a couple of years teaching math. That's when I said a little while ago, where did I start? I actually taught for a few years. And in teaching students and watching them try to work their way through problems and, you know, being able to see where they've gone astray, in some ways I think I do the same thing when I'm working with clients and I see the confusion, I see the complexity, and I can then see the shorter path. There's a big difference between students and corporate clients, though, if you can guess what that is. I mean, those clients are real interested in results, and those students are more interested in the clock on the wall sometimes, I think.
Right, yeah. And which of those two groups are more open to learning?
You know, that's a good question. The best students are very open to learning, and, of course, the best clients are too.
Right, yeah, absolutely. That's what we look for, is the clients are really open to learning and looking at a different way of doing things and stop banging their head against the wall and find some
Absolutely, that's critical.
Yeah, absolutely. So can you give us some examples of how you've helped your clients and the work you do? How does it work?
Yeah, you mentioned earlier that my clients are very diverse. They range from corporate giants like Hitachi to Smith College and public television and all kinds of organizations in between. And that's because clarity and the lack of clarity is not very selective as to where it hangs out. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are no boundaries here. So I actually get to have a lot of fun because what I do applies to so many organizations. It doesn't matter the size of the organization. It doesn't matter the industry. So I create clarity, and it works. You know, it is applied in many different ways. So let me just give you a couple specific examples. So one would be strengthening an executive team. I was called in by a CEO who wanted the team to be much stronger. And then when I got inside and started talking to people, I discovered that there was a lot of distrust and dysfunction, and the CEO didn't even know about any of this. So what I did is really change the way they work together, change the way they make decisions, the way they think together, the way they interact, the way they communicate, so that they all knew how to play the game in a way that they can trust each other and accomplish more. So the CEO was thrilled because he had this incredibly effective team afterwards, and his team was thrilled because they suddenly had this level of trust, and their ability to contribute was so much stronger. So that's one example. A totally different example was when I went to work with a company that wanted to reduce engineering defects in their design processes. So we changed the way they did their design processes, you know, how they came up with their designs, what they did, and the result was fantastic. And in both of these cases, the great thing is that I can go back and see these organizations. And in the case of the engineers, they say, wow, we're doing exactly what we agreed 3 years ago, and we're still getting great results. So I love it when I can get in and help people really change the way they work together and change the results that they're producing, and doing it in a way that it totally sticks. Mm. So those are two different kind of examples.
Now, in those situations, especially one where there was some issues on the leadership team with low trust, do you find that there's resistance to the work that you're asking of them to make those changes early on? And do you need time to, I'm assuming, build rapport and build some camaraderie with them so that they can make the changes that you need them to make?
That's a pretty broad question. There's sometimes the resistance comes from the CEO himself, because sometimes he or she's part of the problem, and that might be that's when that happens. I can't do anything if the CEO, if the person in control doesn't want to change anything. But I find that the others become very receptive to what I'm doing with them very quickly because they see benefits really fast. I don't do a lot of hocus-pocus team-building kinds of stuff. I'm really very specific about this is what we're trying to accomplish, and this is the way we're going to get there. And so I don't see much resistance there.
Yeah. And I'm sure if you go in there and they're obviously are upset or frustrated with certain things that are happening or not happening, and if you can articulate the fact that you're there to help them, you know, resolve that stuff that's driving them all crazy, they're pretty open
right.
to it.
Yeah, well, that's what, you know, clarity, part of clarity is finding that common ground, finding what mm-hmm. their motives are, finding what their situation is. It starts with that. Where are we and what are we trying to get to? What's the problem? What's the issue? So I go in and get to the root of things, and people are usually, you know, really eager to tell you what's going on, truthfully, you know, within the organization.
Right, yeah. They probably feel like they're finally being heard by somebody that can do something about it or cares to.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, okay, this is what we need. A little clarity, a little sense, a little common sense. I'm here to help.
Yeah, somebody's going to listen finally. Great. So speak a little bit more about clarity and why you say it's so important, what it can do or not do for an organization if it's not there.
Okay, so clarity creates speed and better results. And I think that part is pretty intuitive. However, I don't think people understand how enormous the opportunity is for increasing speed and increasing and improving results. For instance, I can cut meetings in half. I can show people how their meetings are twice as long, at least twice as long as they should be. And that's an enormous opportunity to improve productivity in a company. And it's all about clarity. It's all about clarity about what are you trying to accomplish in those meetings. So if you can get your meetings down to less than half what they're running at now, you effectively, I mean, think of how much effective extra workforce you had just added to your organization if all these people are out of the meetings and getting more done. So I think people understand the clarity to let you do things faster, but they need to think more specifically in terms of just where is that opportunity? How big is that opportunity? But that's just one area. Okay, the second area where I think clarity makes a huge difference is in creating confidence and commitment. So if people, and I think these benefits are much less obvious, at least at first blush. But I can give you some examples of those. For instance, 95% of conflict stems from a lack of clarity.
Right.
The other 5% is fundamental differences in values, like what's going on in the Middle East. I can't do anything about those.
Right.
The clarity lets you figure out where you are, where you want to get to, and get there so much faster. And if you do it, if you're clear about it, then people, their confidence builds. Their belief that you're making sense and what you're trying to achieve is stronger. And their commitment builds because they trust the process. They trust where you're going.
And they probably see results faster. Not big results, but they see things moving forward, which gives them the confidence to keep moving as opposed to being
right.
stressed and frustrated about it.
Absolutely. It takes a lot of the stress and frustration out. It's the overused phrase, but it gets everyone on the same page.
Mm-hmm. And when you think about the meeting stuff that you're talking about, you know, if you're talking about cutting meeting times in half, along with cutting meeting times in half, you're probably also creating a lot of clarity around next steps and accountability to those next steps. So people leave the meeting with a lot more certainty about what's coming.
Absolutely. Yeah, and if you can cut a meeting in half and get better results in half the time, and you have people walk out of there going, wow, I know exactly what we just did. How often does that happen? I know exactly what we just accomplished in that meeting. It doesn't happen very often. It's actually kind of funny. I've got people who know that I think that's a great, you know, great meetings are evidence of clarity, and I've had people tell me, you know, I just came from a great meeting. And I said, well, tell me what made it great. And it usually boils down to three things. And one is they say, well, everyone was focused. They stayed on, you know, they weren't playing with their smartphones is number one. Number two, the topic was at least mildly interesting. And Number three is that everyone was well-behaved. There weren't people dominating or being obnoxious in the meeting. So that was the way people, that is the way people categorize or characterize a good meeting. Okay, so on topic, generally interesting, and no bad behavior. But then if I ask, well, tell me about the outcomes. What did you accomplish? I usually get silence. Like, oh, well, I'm not sure what we accomplished. What did we just do? And if you quiz people as they walk out of meetings, more often than not, they don't know what was just accomplished.
Yeah. Even though they thought it was a good meeting, or they enjoyed being there, or whatever, but there was still no.
Yeah, the bar is really, really low.
Outcomes.
Yep, very low bar on that one. So yeah, clarity to me is really the tool to get you better results faster, with greater confidence and greater commitment.
Yeah, cool. So they. You also say that people aren't as clear as they think. And I also often talk about, you know, people are, you know, my concept of specificity, people think they're being specific and they're really not. And I even tell people, you know, in my workshops, you know, when it comes to specificity, more words do not necessarily mean more specificity, right? Because you get those people that just go on and on telling them, you know, all sorts of stories and a lot of information, a lot of words, but doesn't mean it brings any more specificity or probably clarity to the situation. So can you talk about that when you say, you know, people aren't as clear as they think they are? Some examples of,
sure,
of that.
Sure. And let me just mention right now, there's a clarity index on my website, which is uncommonclarity.com. And there's, if you go to that, my homepage, there's Ann's Clarity Index. And that's a 15-question, 5-minute assessment that gives you some interesting thoughts about how clear you really are as an organization. But anyway, back to your specific question here, let's just think a minute for about the evidence of a lack of clarity in organizations. Let's take the constant complaint of poor communication. And you just mentioned that. You're saying people tend to just do more and more, but it's still poor communication.
Right.
So poor communication is one example. You hear it's like a universal complaint about organizations. How about dragged out decisions? Decisions that go on and on. Do you encounter that one, Skip?
Oh yeah, it's funny. Many of my clients, you know, they don't couch it in the phrase of procrastination or whatever, but there's so many decisions or things that should be moving forward that have just been lingering forever. And usually when we get in there and I get in there with them, those things start moving forward because, I don't allow that to happen. We start making decisions and chipping away. But, yeah, there's all sorts of stuff that's just hanging out there that people, you know is going on. And it frustrates them because, well, we talked about this at the last meeting and there's, you know, and nothing moved forward on it. And where did it go? It goes into a black hole.
That's right. So you have a meeting, you don't make a decision, then you bring in other people, maybe you have another meeting, you go do other things, and the decision just drags on and no one can make a decision finally. And then when they do make a decision, the next thing that happens is often second-guessing. Second-guess your decision. It might be the people who made the decision who are second-guessing the decision, or it might be, you know, other people who were less involved, you know, the managers, people who have to implement it. So you're back to the drawing board, talking about the same decision. Another example, I mean, we already talked about unproductive meetings. Unproductive meetings are, I have yet to encounter an organization who raves about their short, powerful meetings. And if people were really clear, that's what they would do. They would rave about short, powerful meetings. If you had great clarity, you wouldn't have dragging on the decisions. Another example, piles of email. You know, employees spend on average, I think it's 28% of their time reading or responding to email. How can we possibly think we're doing that clearly if the biggest complaint is poor communication?
Right.
And everyone knows their inbox is overly full of emails and they can't possibly get through it all. So to me, all of these are evidence of a lack of clarity. How about projects that are internal projects? Oftentimes they're launched with great fanfare. This is all exciting, guys. This is what we're doing, a lot of pomp and circumstance. And then what happens down the road a few months or a month or even weeks? It gets dropped.
Yep.
It's abandoned. It's like the flavor of the month. Something better comes along, and so we move on to something else, and it just plain gets dropped. That, to me, is not evidence of great clarity. It's the evidence of the opposite. Another
I was just going to mention, a lot of the times I hear things about continually changing priorities, right?
Right.
Today is a priority, and then next week something else pops up, and well, what happened to this thing? And there's a lot of lack of clarity oftentimes around priorities, I find.
Yes, totally. That's another good example.
Yeah.
Another one is if you work in a big corporation and you watch the organizational chart change periodically, sometimes it happens a couple times a year, people's offices get shuffled, their titles get shuffled, and everything stays the same. It's like, okay, there was a solution that was not a solution. It didn't accomplish anything. And I think one of my favorites is that when you hear people just say, oh, you know, everything takes longer than it should. And what does that mean? You know, what's that evidence of? It's a lack of clarity, a lack of clarity about purpose and a lack of clarity of your process. So everything shouldn't take longer than it should. and it's sad when people are just resigned to that. And that's part of the problem, is that they just assume that things have to be slow, that decisions have to be that drag on, and
right,
that meetings have to be awful.
Yeah. And just clarity around that, well, how long should the process take? You know, you haven't really defined that either. This is just an assumption, or you're throwing this out there as taking longer than it should. Well, maybe, maybe not, because you haven't defined what the baseline is, right, or what it should,
yeah,
how long it should take.
And actually, that's a good point, because when you think about the incredible improvements that we've made in productivity in corporate America with streamlining our production lines, the production,
right,
processes, you know, all the physical processes, thanks to lean manufacturing, we have a much better idea about how to be sure that whether it's a production line or moving paper through the organization, whatever you have to manage, that is done in a streamlined, visible fashion where you can see where the bottlenecks are. You can see, you know, what needs to be improved. You know, when a production line is disrupted, when part of it's shut down, chaos is obvious. It's totally obvious. But when we're talking about decisions and people working together and people trying to communicate and interacting and thinking, it's not obvious when a piece of that production line breaks down. It's not obvious when you start spinning into spirals or, you know, creating spaghetti with multiple conversations and decisions going on simultaneously. But that kind of chaos, like you say, you don't know how long things should take, because it's we're talking about cognitive processes, interactive processes, not physical processes, which you can easily measure and
right,
see and watch, you know. So here we are, here we've made these huge improvements in the way we manage production processes and have gotten huge productivity improvements out of it, but we've done almost nothing for these cognitive processes, the interaction processes, the way we work together. And that's a huge opportunity, and the companies that embrace this have the opportunity to improve their productivity and improve their results substantially and create a new competitive edge out of this.
And make people happier and less stressed along the way.
That's right. You get the confidence and commitment with it, which means you've got a happier workforce, you got less attrition, and you got everyone really giving their best to the company.
Yeah.
Not frustrated and not saying, oh, everything just takes longer than it should.
Yeah. So that kind of leads into my next question, which you may have already talked about, but you know, if companies and organizational leaders start really increasing their clarity and take some of your advice in this area, are there other benefits that we haven't touched on with regard
to clearly
this, more clarity?
The productivity. I mean, obviously the productivity. Mm-hmm. I hope that's obvious. You can really do it. Pretty much anything faster if you're clear about where you are, what you're trying to do, and the process for getting there. The other thing is that it's not just about being faster, it's about doing things better. I'll just give you one typical example. Okay, introverts typically wait to be asked for input. They don't just talk.
Yep.
So I'm an introvert, I spent a lot of my life sitting in meetings, waiting patiently until I'm confident that what I have to say is what is needed. But when I don't hear that opening, I think, okay, now might not be the time. And I've changed a bit in the last number of years. But the fact that you don't know for sure that what you have to contribute is appropriate at that moment, an introvert will wait. Whereas if the meeting or if the person asking the question is unclear, you'll never get that input out of them because that moment that the introvert's waiting for just won't happen. So, you know, you're not getting the best input from your people, and that's just one example of how you're not. And so you can get better results as well as faster results. And the third, we did mention confidence, that belief that what you are deciding makes more sense because you've followed a more logical discipline process or you've gotten better input from other people. And number four, the commitment. And that one's huge. So, and then you already mentioned the fact that that leads to number five, which is improved morale. If you understand the goals, you have that clarity of purpose. If you understand how you can contribute, that clarity of process and roles and responsibilities, and you believe decisions are made fairly, you will be a much stronger contributor and a much happier employee. So it sounds pretty simple, but it absolutely works.
Yeah. So is it really possible to increase an individual's clarity? You obviously have a long history of it. It's sort of part of your DNA and makeup. You know, I find so many people fall into these habits of non-specific communication in the work I do, and it's probably the same with you. It's sort of a habit of communicating where people either think this way or they don't think this way, and sometimes even, you know, there's too much attention to detail or whatever. How do you increase somebody's clarity?
Okay, it's yes, it is possible to increase someone's clarity, to answer the first question, but it starts with awareness. It starts with understanding that things are not as clear as they are. And I think, as I mentioned earlier, people they kind of generally understand that, but they don't really see it. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, if you're colorblind, you don't know you're colorblind unless you take a test. And a lot of people are clarity blind. They can't see what they can't see. They can't see what they haven't experienced before.
Right.
There was I wrote an article in my newsletter that just went out this morning, so some people on the call are familiar with this, but I was talking about the different ways trails are blazed, the way trails are marked so hikers don't get lost. And you can follow a trail that has a certain level of marking and think, okay, this is kind of like standard blaze marks and standard rock cairns and things like that, and this is great, but the day you walk on a trail that has really fantastic markings, you just go, whoa, this is amazing. This has got, it tells you you're going to have a left turn here and there's going to be a right turn and the trail's about to diverge, you know, split, and it's got this extra level of clarity. You didn't even think that that was necessary or possible, but once you see it, then you're thrilled. So you have to see what that difference can be from adding that clarity. So the first step is really creating that awareness in different situations so people stop and understand that, wait a minute, we're screwed up here. Let's straighten things out. Another example is if you put a glass of water on the table, and most of us will look at that glass and say, well, yeah, that's a glass of water. And I have Kit Knight is like my favorite artist. She just paints the most amazing pictures. And she will paint pictures of glasses full of water. And when you look at her paintings, you realize that you're not looking at the same thing she was looking at. You know? It's like, where did you see all those colors and those? It totally changes the way you look at a glass of water because she's bringing out in paint something that you never noticed before. Does that make sense? So it's like all of a sudden you have this whole new way of looking at the glass of water. And the same is true with bringing clarity to the workplace. It gives you a whole new way to look at how things are done, how the meetings run, how decisions are made, how conversations happen, and how the communication is falling apart.
Right. The metaphor or analogy I thought of as you were speaking was, I just remember back, you know, when I was like in fourth grade, and went to get an eye exam, and they realized I wasn't seeing very well, and I needed glasses. Right? Well,
right.
I didn't know how lack of clarity my eyesight was until I took that test. Right? And wow, now I get glasses. Wow, this is what I've been been missing. Everything's been fuzzy for so long.
Yeah.
But I didn't.
Actually, that's
I didn't
a
know
great example.
I didn't know it was supposed to be any different, right? Because it's just what it is in your situation. Yeah,
and that's a perfect example. And actually, that happened to me too. I should have thought of that one. Same thing happened to me. I went for an eye exam, and I said, "Well, no wonder I can't recognize people.
Yeah.
I can't see them." Well, it's kind of like the first time I ever tried to pay attention to a football game. I never was much of a football fan until fairly recently. And if you remember your first football games, I don't know what your attitude is going in, but I always remember sitting there watching. Nothing happens, so you get distracted, you look away, and when you look back, the action's over. You missed it again, you know?
Right.
So you watch, and nothing happens, and you don't know what you're looking for. And if you're watching a hockey game, you can't find the puck if you're new to this. So why do these people keep jumping over the boards, and where's the puck, and what are they trying to do? Because it's too fast. You can't see it. So in all those situations, you learn new ways to look at the game, new way you see football completely differently after you learn how it works.
Right.
And then you know when to look away and when to look back. I think you have that automatic sort of natural timing in your brain once you get used to watching football.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I can increase people's clarity by giving them, the equivalent of helping them see how to watch football or how to see see the colors and lights in a glass that my friend the artist can create.
Right. So it seems like, again, as we talked a little bit earlier, people are going through whatever machinations and motions that they're doing to run their companies, to run their business. Oftentimes they think they're being clear, but they're not. But they don't know any different, and nobody, because their organizational leaders really pushes back, they just kind of walk away scratching their heads, trying to figure it out on their own, I guess, right? And nobody's pushing back and asking for more clarity in a lot of situations, so this thing just perpetuates.
Yeah, and a lot of times it's the executives who aren't clear.
Right.
I mean, so as I was saying, a lot of people have this general notion that things are kind of confused and not as efficient as they could be, but if you were to ask, ask the executives, ask the managers, how would you rate your own ability to make decisions? How do you think they'd answer?
They would probably give themselves a pretty good score.
That's right, because they've accomplished a lot. They couldn't possibly be where they are today if they aren't pretty good at making decisions.
Right.
So they give themselves a high score. And if they're all giving themselves a high score and people think the decisions get really bogged down and are slow and there's a lot of second guessing, what does that tell you? We have a mismatch here. Or if you ask executives and managers to rate their ability to run meetings, how do you think they'd rate them? They think they're really good at it.
Absolutely, because nobody's giving them feedback otherwise.
Yeah, and if they're so good, and if they're setting this great example, and if they're teaching people, and giving feedback to their direct reports, which is what managers and all are supposed to do, then everyone would be running good meetings, and there wouldn't be this incredible clamor about unproductive meetings. Same goes for communication skills. I mentioned this in my newsletter this morning, too. I got emails from some CEOs recently where they were real short, to the point, very executive-looking emails. And I had to write back 3 times to figure out what they were saying.
Right.
It's like, come on, what about this? What about this? And it would have been so much easier to take a little more time up front and clarify what they were trying to accomplish, or better yet, pick up the phone, because email's a silly way to do things unless it's a real simple situation.
Right, yeah. And a lot of people hide behind that, the email stuff, especially in the work I do with the project management world. They love the technology, so they'll hide behind it and use it for everything, for all their communications.
Right.
So other strategies to create clarity. Where can people start to begin creating clarity? They've got the awareness, or may have the awareness or whatever. What are some steps to start creating more clarity in our business and lives?
Okay. Let me just give you back up once here and talk about one more example where people, where these executives are not as clear as they think they are.
Okay.
Because I think that this whole bit about that awareness is so important. I often will be sitting in executive team meetings, and the group inevitably thinks that they are having a really excellent focused discussion. But almost always, I can sit there, if I'm just listening, I'm not participating at that time or something, and I will listen, and I might count five to seven is pretty typical, different decisions that are really in the conversation, that are under discussion. And sometimes, along with that 5 to 7 decisions, there are a couple different plans they're talking about. So while they think they're incredibly focused, I'm sitting there thinking, no, you're talking about 6 or 8 different things, almost without fail. And then if I interrupt after a while, and say, sometimes I'm supposed to be just listening and waiting my turn, but sometimes I can't stand
right.
it. Stop. So look, here are the 5 different decisions you are considering, and here are the 2 plans you're talking about. And of course, initially they're shocked, and some of them are really upset. It's like, who are you to tell us this? But then what happens is people go, oh my God, you're right. And all of a sudden they're off and running, because as soon as you break it into we've got 5 different decisions here, it becomes pretty obvious that, okay, we got to answer this one first, then we have to answer this one, then we have to get to this one. You create that clarity, and all of a sudden you've got better communication and greater speed, and they're off and running. And look at the excitement and the energy and enthusiasm that's generated by that clarity. But it never fails to happen.
Right. And from that process, things fall into place. Boom, 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 one after the other. And there's a logical progression, as opposed to just being a morass of 5 things that are floating out there that we can't grasp.
That's right. And that's not just in executive team meetings. This happens. It happens in most conversations and that people have, where they're really talking about multiple things. It's like if you are talking to your partner about getting a new car, and you throw out the idea of, well, I'm trying to decide about buying a new car, and your partner might say, well, gee, I think we should get a Prius or something. And then someone else, if you're in a group, someone else will throw out another idea, and then someone else will come along and say, well, are you going to buy or lease? And then there might be the other question where you're maybe in your own head, you're going, is this the car I'm going to use for commuting, or is this the car I'm going to use for weekend? So think about how many different decisions we just talked about. You know, which car should I buy? Which type of car should I buy? How am I going to use this car? Am I going to buy or lease? And this is a typical example of most conversations are really talking about 5 or 6 different decisions.
Right.
But one of those is obviously the first question. It's like, what am I going to use this car for? Why do I need a new car? You got to start there. The choice of whether you buy a Prius or a Honda or something is way, way down the list of this cascade of decisions. But so that's the kind of thing where you say, where do you start? I think that was your question, right? We digressed here.
Yeah.
But where do you start in creating clarity? The number one absolute most important thing is to start recognizing that lack of clarity that's around you everywhere. You have to start seeing it. And when I'm involved with a client, I help them see it in a multitude of places, but you can start seeing it too. And you can start, watching those times when you feel confused or frustrated or unable to participate because you're not sure what people are asking. You can you can notice that and recognize that, well, that's a lack of clarity. So number 2 then is, once you start recognizing that, is to develop the habit of asking clarifying questions. You have to speak up and ask those questions. Too often any requests and questions are really vague, and this whole spaghetti thing we're talking about is surrounding you. So you have to stop and ask. I was contacted the other day by someone who wanted to improve her ability to think on her feet. She works in healthcare, and they use a standardized technique that the Navy developed called SBAR, S-B-A-R. It's where they talk about situation, background, assessment, and recommendation. So those are the 4 pieces of information they need to talk about in communicating healthcare situations. So she wanted to improve her ability to think on her feet, and I asked her, do you have trouble when you are dealing with this during this SBAR process. She says, no, I know exactly, I can do that, that's fine. So here's, you know, she doesn't have any problem thinking on her feet. The problem is that the people who are coming in not using SBAR, you know, in another circumstance and asking her questions just plain aren't clear.
Right.
You know, it's like if someone asked me, what did you do? You know how many different ways I could answer that question? You know, well, I create clarity. I help my clients get better results faster with greater confidence and commitment. I sit in my office and do a lot of marketing. I mean, how many different ways could you possibly
right.
answer that question? So yep. here she is feeling like she's not quick on her feet when the real problem is that she's not being given a clear question. So it's a total lack of clarity. So instead of, you know, you have the first step, as I said, was recognizing that's the case. That's essential because otherwise you start to just feel inadequate. You feel like, oh, man, what do I
right.
say? You know, and it, that's when you get stressed out. You get nervous, whereas once you realize it, wait a minute, that was not a reasonable question.
Not me.
Yeah, so what are you really asking for here?
Mm-hmm.
So another example is that I teach people to soar through decisions, and that's a four-step process, the S-O-A-R. And it accomplishes the same thing as this SBAR. It gets people on the same page as you know, as each other and saying, okay, the first step of making a decision is to understand what the decision is, the statement, that's the S. Second thing is to define the objectives. What are you trying to accomplish? That's the O. The third are the alternatives. What are my choices here? And the fourth are the risks. That's the R. What can go wrong? How should we think about this? So the point is, it's a four-step process that once everyone's on the same page and understands this, it's a shortcut to knowing what questions people are asking and what are you trying to contribute next. Does that make sense? So it's like just like the SBAR situation where she
right.
knew what she needed to say and to cover those four bases, having this process lets you know exactly what. Okay, we're on step one here. We're on step two here, et cetera. So
right,
anyway,
it gives you a frame, it gives you a framework for taking a look and saying, well, what's missing? You know, where do I need
exactly.
to invest some energy?
Exactly. It's a framework. It's a language. It's a shared language. It's a shared process, a shared language, a shared framework that speeds up communication. So, but when that's missing, you have to ask questions. You have to, you know, ask questions like, what are we trying to accomplish? Or what specifically do you need or want? What specifically am I supposed to be giving you here? Or how will we know when we're done? You know, what's success
right.
going to look like here? So if you can ask those questions, if you can get in the habit of asking those questions, you will save yourself a tremendous amount of stress and time.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I like the SBAR framework. I love the SOAR framework. It gives people something that they can look towards and work through to figure out where they need clarity, where they need to invest some energy. And in situations, especially in meetings with leadership teams or whatever, you know, somebody's got to be, if you have that common language, you know, chances are somebody can step up and push back or say, hey, let's take a step back here. And you know, we're a little light and let's focus in this area. And it gives you some way to work through things.
Meetings keeps cropping up, and I need to say something more about meetings because another example of a lack of clarity is that people blame meetings for being evil, and there's nothing evil about meetings. Meetings are just how people work together.
Right.
You bring people together, and if the meeting is not productive, it's because the people are not productive or they don't know how to work together. So, for instance, we just talked about the SBAR and the SOAR. I've got this audio seminar on my website that's called We've Got to Stop Meeting Like This, and part of what's in there is defining there are only six possible types of outcomes for a meeting. There are only six. And if you know those six, then instead of sitting in a meeting and start talking, you say, wait a minute, which of these six are we after? You know, it's
right.
And if everyone's on the same page there, then you can get real clear about, oh, you need this now. If you have this in your hands, you are done and we can move on to the next thing instead of just talking. So anyway, I think that having those frameworks are huge in terms of improving clarity. So back to what I said about where to get started, number one was to recognize that where the lack of clarity that surrounds you. Number two is to develop those clarifying questions. And then number three is I gave you a list of some of those questions. And you really need to, as an individual, you can create a lot of clarity just by asking these questions, by believing that it's, you know, understanding that it's necessary and by asking those questions. After that, it's hard to have a huge impact all by yourself. I mean, you as an, you know, if I'm just talking to people as an individual, if you lead a group, then there's so much more that's possible because you are in a position, or if you lead an organization, if you're a CEO, you can create the kind of clarity of process similar to what we're talking about with SBAR or SOAR or some of those things that shortcuts the communication, that gets everyone into the same framework, using the same language, and getting better results faster.
Right, so you're giving your whole team or group or whatever those tools, and that becomes your standard operating procedure, how we're going to run things, how we're going to communicate, and everybody has the same common language and models to work through, and it'll cut through the lack of clarity.
Right, yeah.
Awesome.
And to help with that whole process, I told my newsletter list, or the people I invited to this, that I had an exciting announcement to make. This is big news. I think it was about a year and a half ago I announced that I was working on a Clarity app. And this is an app that runs on iPhones and iPads. And I, of course, was not developing the software myself. And so this has taken a ridiculous amount of time. But I'm excited to say that Ann's Clarity app is in the iTunes store now. It's
awesome.
There, and yeah, and it's brand new. It's really like the cheat sheet for clarity, and it's if you aren't familiar with a lot of the things I talk about, you might be wise to sign up for my newsletter first, get the app. By the way, get the app now because it's free right now. It's free for 1 week. So
awesome.
Get the app now. Go to the iTunes store, download it. It'll work on your iPhone or iPad. But if some of the things there don't make sense, you may need to sign up for my newsletter or go to my website and start learning more about the things I'm talking about. Because the app is not like this giant repository of long articles. It's short, concise. Things like the SOAR process are in there. It's the simple, short, concise frameworks that will help you do things better and faster. And if you share, you know, if they're shared with other people, will speed things up.
Wow,
so
that's exciting.
It is exciting.
I'm so honored that you're announcing it and releasing it here on the Expert Interview Series. That's pretty cool.
That's right. This is it. This is my first announcement.
It's just called Ann's Clarity App?
Ann's Clarity App. And I know the iTunes store is ridiculous for being able to find stuff except for the top few things. And this is brand new, so it certainly isn't the top thing. But go to look for Ann's Clarity App. Search for it. You'll find it.
Awesome.
I haven't checked this morning, but it's supposed to be free as of this morning. And if you love it, please rate it really highly because ratings early on really help things. If you don't like it, please let me know. Don't rate it at all. Now, I've never made an app before. Cut me a little slack. Let me know if it's got a problem or something. But it's really exciting to have it done finally. And my goal here really is to keep it able to provide the simple, concise techniques that will help people create shared clarity across a group.
Great. Cool. We've got about 30 people live on the line. I'm just since we have a few minutes left. If anybody has a question for Ann about a situation that you need more clarity around, you can press star 2 to raise your hand, and I'm sure Ann will be happy to answer any specific questions you might have about what you heard here today, or if you have a situation you want some help with. Feel free to press star 2, raise your hand, I'll recognize you and unmute you if you have that. You also have, you mentioned something earlier about a clarity index. Can you talk a little bit more about that and tell people where they can get that from you?
Yeah, if you go to my website, uncommonclarity.com, you'll see right in the middle of pretty much of the homepage, there's Ann's Clarity Index. And this is like I said, it's 15 questions. It'll take you 5 minutes, and you'll get the results afterwards when you're done. But it gives you a different way of looking at just how clear your organization is. I also have a shared clarity index, which I set up so groups, so whole departments can respond and you can get collective results. So anyone who's a manager or an executive or a CEO or whatever who wants to know how their organization would respond and get anonymous, you know, collective data, you can let me know and I'll give you the link to the Shared Clarity Index. So yeah, that's on my website. While you're on my website, if you scroll down to the bottom, there's a place there where you can enter your email address and get on the list for my monthly newsletter, which is just loaded with tips on how to create clarity. And then, like I said, don't forget to go download that app. I'm really excited for people to try it out.
And the Clarity app on the iTunes Store. I encourage everybody to go get it. I will also put that in the follow-up email to everybody who's getting the download, too, so they know there's something special they can get from you as well. So we'll definitely get the promotion out there for it to my list and everybody who signed up for this today. Any other final thoughts on Clarity, Anne, before we head out for the rest of the day?
Well, one other thing I was going to mention is that I work with clients in generally in two different ways. I mean, I work with them in a lot of different ways, but they're the ones who want me to come in and guide them to better results faster using my clarity. In other words, they use my expertise to get them better results faster. Then there's the group that has me teach them how to create clarity themselves. And so this really gets into helping them create a culture of clarity and an organization that knows how to communicate and interact and think and make decisions together in the most efficient and effective manner. So, I also speak and write, and people get my clarity in a lot of different ways, like through my Clarity app. But
right.
I just wanted to point that out because to create a culture of clarity is one thing, but to just come in and help you create the clarity you need for a specific situation to get to where you need to go, that's obviously a simpler process in most cases.
Right. It's probably simpler than a lot of people think it is because they've been struggling with it for so long. You can come in and say, boom, right there.
Yeah, a lot of times the solutions can be simple, but it's knowing where to look because, one of the biggest one of the things we didn't talk about earlier are all the solutions to problems that never really solve the problem because they aren't targeting the right thing to change. So knowing what to change, knowing what to do differently is huge. It's the hard part. Once you know that, solving a problem, making an improvement is much, much easier.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and because a lot of times we're looking in the wrong places or we're blaming the wrong thing and we're going down the wrong path.
The only way to solve a problem is to identify the cause of the problem and eliminate it. And too often that's one of the steps that is skipped. People don't understand, what's making this thing misbehave? They just say, well, let's try this. Let's try that. And there's way too
right.
much randomness going on.
Yeah, a lot of trial and error. And waste a lot of time and productivity and everything. So I think this your processes around clarity can absolutely make a difference in organizations. Again, I talk a lot about specificity, and there's such a lack of specificity that creates the lack of clarity. And I think some of your insights and ability to really cut to the chase and identify those things that are floating around there that people don't even realize are getting in the way of clarity. You can really help them cut to the chase and find those answers much more quickly and move things forward. So I definitely recommend the work you do and encourage people to follow up with you and get the app, get Anne's Clarity app, and also take the Clarity Index. So I think it'll really help provide that awareness and those insights that Anne, you were talking about as the first step.
Right. And if anyone is serious about really creating clarity in the organization, I'd be happy to talk. Just, give me a call and I'm happy to discuss what might be involved in all that. But I really think that it's important to recognize that how immense this opportunity is and how much time is really wasted in organizations and how much backtracking and rework is necessary because of a lack of clarity.
Yeah, I think people are feeling that and sensing those challenges and the frustrations, and I don't think they know how to define what the problem is, and probably 80% of the time or more, it's this lack of clarity. So
yes.
I think it's tremendous benefits in doing this type of work, and it's relatively simple work once you're aware of it and know where to look as you've been well trained from the very beginning in your life to do this work. So I commend you for the work you do and making the world a better place and making
you.
You know, making clarity a key component of of making the world a better place. That's very cool.
Okay, so we have no questions?
No, I think everybody, you did such a great job. We have no questions. Let me refresh and make sure.
Well, then one of my prime lessons or messages is that you never go to the end of the hour unless you need it.
Yep. Right, exactly.
I think we should be done.
So we got 5 minutes to go. I wish everybody a great rest of the summer. And wish Ann your Bruins a great rest of the summer, getting ready for the new hockey season. It's coming up in a few weeks. So I'm looking forward to getting back out there. So have a great summer, everybody. We'll see you on the other side.
Thank you for tuning in, everybody, and thank you, Skip, for having me. It's been fun.
All right. Bye, Ann. And everybody else. Bye.